Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity.
Well, hey, Dom, here we are, another week. What's going on?
Hey, Chris, how are you, man? Just another hot week in Arizona.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing, getting ready for this.
The worst part is just it's been humid with some of these storms, but it's okay. We're moving on. But you know what is exciting? After our last guest, Artie, with Smart City Expo Atlanta, we discussed on the podcast last week about potentially getting down there and going to the conference. You know, we worked out this week that we're officially going to go. We're going to head down there. I'm pretty excited for it. I think that might be the first conference that I will actually get to travel to and attend.
I got to hope that my new job isn't listening to this yet because I haven't carved it out. But yeah, I got to find a way to make it happen. We've been talking for so long how important it is for us to get back in person and see people and have that water cooler or coffee talk or beer talk and really drive these things home. Plus, great to take the Urban Complex on the road. And so if you're listening and you want to go check it out because it's just gonna be a blast. I think it's gonna be the first real event around this community. We have such a good group of folks, and I think it's gonna be a great time. So
yeah, excited. I think when we first started this idea or had this idea, we wanted to do these live at conferences.
Exactly.
People. So it'll be good to actually maybe do some live recording there as well. But I mean, you saw the leadership of Artie last week, the incredible person that she is and the initiative she's driving. So definitely would love to have everyone come join us at Smart City Expo Atlanta.
I think it's both of our jaws dropped when she invited us on. They're like, we'll do it.
So yeah, so stay tuned for more information. But yeah, it's smartcityexpoatlanta.com. Come join us. It'll be fun. So now that we have something to look forward in the future, who are we talking to today, Chris? Who's our guest?
We both know him well, Chris Camacho, one of our great local stories. He's the CEO of the Greater Phoenix Economic Council. I'm trying to remember when I first met Chris. I've talked to him so many times. He's just a person that rallies. I'll tell you, I've always been impressed by GPEC, and I'm an IT guy, and I love what they're doing. They focus the GPEC ambassador program around economic development people, but they want people to come in and learn the stories and amplify the stories, but also contribute to the stories. And because I was doing some really interesting things with our stadium and things that we're bringing forward, Internet of Things, and things that we're bringing forward a smart city and smart campus mindset, he and his team started realizing that we could host people at ASU and we could tell the story of some of their companies that were coming. And all of a sudden I went from meeting him and his team and then boom, they're plugging me in. And I didn't mind, it was a meeting a month or something, but it was really fun. Like they just are doing great things. And I don't know, I can't pinpoint how I know him, but just amazing what he's done and what GPEC's all about. How about you?
Yeah, his leadership is terrific. Obviously I'm at the state now, but we're kind of colleagues in our economic development organizations, but obviously from my time with the city of Phoenix and then with the nonprofit working to build the smart region, I mean, his leadership cannot be understated. It was so incredible to kind of walk through the process of standing up the Connective and the smart region initiative and having him with the foresight to understand where things were going and being bold and brave enough to say, hey, this is, let's take a step back. Let's slow down and let's like really think about how we can build something that's going to be long-term and really innovative. Because it's hard when you're an organization representing 22 cities, that's 22 mayors, that's 22.
Yeah, you feel like one isn't on the board or one's holding it back or one's getting all the limelight. Yeah, it must be tough.
Yeah, it takes incredible leadership. And so I'm excited to to hear his perspective on smart cities, especially because I don't think we've had an economic development perspective yet. So I think this is going to be very insightful for our audience, because let's be honest, a lot of things that are driven in cities are driven by economic development, right?
And so, growth, right? If you're not growing, you might have some chinks in the armor, cracks in the pavement, so to speak, in your own city management. So yeah, good point.
Yeah, so his perspective will probably provide a lot of fuel for other leaders in other cities to understand how might I tell a story to around economic development to help drive my smart city initiative. So I think this is going to be very useful for a lot of our audience. So excited to have him on. Should we bring him in?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Chris, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, happy to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Well, you know, we've found that the best way to start is let the audience understand our guests. So just tell us a little bit about you as a person, Chris, and about your background. And, you know, what do you want podcast audience to know about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I'm one of those Midwesterner hustle guys that just, I'm scrappy. You know, I was fortunate enough to be given an opportunity in Arizona almost 17 years ago now, and moved from St. Louis to Yuma, which was quite a move. After growing up in Quincy, Illinois, going to undergrad and grad school in St. Louis, moved to St. Louis and then moved to Yuma, spent 3.5 years running their economic development strategy on the border. Opened my eyes to a lot of different things. We could talk about that if you'd like. But then, you know, ultimately moved up to Phoenix in 2008. So incredible time to move to Phoenix when the, the market's just imploding. And, you know, I obviously learned a lot about the way down. It was a long precipitous fall that we experienced. And ultimately, we built this economy back stronger than better than ever. And we're reaping those rewards of being intentional. Really for the last decade. So here at Greater Phoenix Economic Council, I've served as the CEO here since 2014, and it's been a hell of a ride.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So, you know, you're now the CEO of the GPEC, Greater Phoenix Economic Council. What's that like? You know, we really haven't had someone leading economic development before on the podcast. So how does that fit in with the smart city mindset? But what is it you're doing? What are you trying to accomplish? What's the mission? Help us figure out why this is so important for cities.
Yeah, I mean, our core mission is to attract enterprises from around the world that create quality jobs for our citizens and then focus on the regional competitive position. So that's, you know, in part, you have to be a convener, a collaborator. Obviously, leadership's really important, but we do so in a public-private way that enables the market to evolve. And I'd even argue more recently in economic development, we've become sort of futurists. You have to be able to predict market trends, predict market changes, industry changes, and part of that smart city. So technology change has disrupted the way that city governance models work. And so I think even at GPEC, which historically it's been predicated on, well, did you bring the next job to market? You know, I like to think about our work in one business, kind of one job, one life at a time that we're affecting. But yet when you think about the altruistic work we do, you also have to put your market in a position to meet the changing climate, the changing needs of whether it's, again, technology, it's people, it's society. And so all of that in one is kind of what we do is putting points on the board for the community. And I think it's actually very similar to being on a sports team. I use this analogy a lot, but you know, you have your captain that's really driving the strategy, you have your role players that execute, and you have your competition on the other side of the field. And at the same time, there's tension, there's conflict, there's all these things that happen around you. And I mean, shoot, smart cities and smart region isn't a great example of that. being fluid and adaptive, I don't know what it is. So I think that's a great analogy for the conversation today.
Great. And before we jump to the next question, you need to brag a little bit. we didn't just grab you because you knew a little thing or two about economic development, but hasn't GPEX been awarded something pretty big?
For the last couple of years, we've been ranked the top, one of the top economic development organizations, but recently International Economic Development Council. So all of our peers rated GPEC as the top economic development organization in the United States, and something we're very proud of. Obviously, hats off to all of our communities, mayors, councils, obviously the county, and in addition to all of our private sector partners, our state partners that make this all possible. And hell, we got a great market. I mean, the market really matters, but I'll tell you, we're pushing it. We're pushing this market in a direction that embraces technology, embraces entrepreneurship. And again, I expect our next 20 years to be our best 20 years that Arizona's ever experienced.
Yeah, awesome. You guys should be really proud. I mean, great trajectory. And I mean, you just build a lot of fanfare locally that spreads out. So congratulations. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Chris, let's kind of like double click now on the smart city aspect of it. You talked about how it needs to be fluid, and you're right. One of the favorite questions we love to ask is, you know, what is our guest perspective of smart cities? What is it to you? What's working, what's not working? Because I think as we all can attest, you know, there's no one definition. And so as Chris mentioned, we haven't really had that economic development perspective onto the podcast yet. So we'd love to get, you know, your internal perspective of what is smart cities to you in terms of economic development. And again, what's working, what's not working for you at the moment?
Well, let's start with what it's not, because I think there's so much buzz phrases in our field. So when you say smart cities, and no surprise, you get a lot of different answers. But in my mind, it's about a solution to a problem set that's generated or developed by citizens of a community. And if you can address those citizen needs, you know, albeit at a city level or at scale, which is our approach and our focus with you guys as partners, at a regional scale that lowers costs, it addresses a multi-jurisdictional need, which is that's what we've been doing for 30 years, is working on the economy with 22 cities. So just imagine if you're a company trying to come into a market and you had to go meet with 22 different cities instead of coming to a one-stop center. I think of technology adoption to address these citizen needs in a very similar fashion. Imagine if there's an entity, you know, like one we created called the Connective, that enables, you know, the technology solution to be not only vetted and tested and analyzed before adoption, but ultimately best practices are shared when a city has probably more of an appetite to be faster and probably more of an adopter early on. How can you share those best practices interregionally, but then we adopt at scale, again, lowering costs and addressing more citizen solutions all at once. So that's how I think about smart cities and hopefully morphing into a smart regional approach.
Yeah, I think it's tremendous that idea of, again, starting with the challenges and the rest will kind of come. It's I think, the perfect approach, as you know, we've been driving down this path together. So, but let's really talk about that idea around scale. You know, we had Jen Sanders on a couple of weeks ago, who's helping now to kind of lead a North Texas regional smart region, you know, largely built off of some of the work we've done here with the Connective. But how important is scale to economic development, to what you're hearing from industry? I think, you know, you touched a little bit on it with the last answer, but really talk to us about why scale matters and why it's going to be kind of the real differentiator, in your opinion, moving forward here into the future.
Well, Metro Phoenix, Dom, as you know, it's almost 5 million people, and we're growing at, you know, roughly 100,000 people a year and 1 million people every decade. And so, yeah, we're going to scale as a region. And I think about how do we learn from other regions around us that are either larger or have been around a lot longer, and learn from them as to the probably more challenging implementations that they've had. And whether that's transportation infrastructure, it's optimizing public infrastructure, it's a variety of things. And I think about, you know, technology in the vein of how technology has disrupted virtually every sector in the COVID era, which is a short era. However, think about digitization as it relates to virtually how we deliver education curriculum to students, to, you know, how we pass and transmit electrons on the energy sector, or, you know, from a data perspective, the intensity of data as we know it today. The world's changing so rapidly. So the difference, I think, that scale provides, one, it's a lower cost value, but also you're reaching more citizens. So you're addressing more issues in a way that will have overarching benefit, as opposed to what we saw early on was simply you'd get these solutions companies going to sell their product or their widget or solution to city councilman or woman. And then, you know, the councilman would say, well, this sounds interesting. Let's go to the broader council and let's get them on board. And then we try to get it to fit into a procurement model. And then ultimately it solved a very minute issue that may or may not have existed within the citizenry. So instead, I think you reverse engineer the structure to identify the problem sets of the majority of your citizenry first, enables you then to go test and validate the best solution, and then adopt that scale across multiple jurisdictions. Because what that does is it leads to smart governance. And at the end of the day, if we can get city managers working with CIOs, working with political leaders and procurement officers, sounds really easy, doesn't it? Totally not easy.
But not even within one organization, it's easy.
you can crack that code. You know, that's the holy grail. But I'll tell you, I mean, we've got a lot of people leaning into that here in Metro Phoenix, and I think we're on a unique path. And I think we're going to solve some of these big ticket issues together and use technology to do so.
Yeah. I think that's what's really exciting about this journey. You know, instead of running out and just going after that shiny widget, as you mentioned, you know, thanks to your leadership, we actually took a step back and said, okay, how can we think about this differently? How can we create that smart governance model, that structure that enables us to really drive innovation in whichever sector we choose, right? You said education to energy to data, right? If you develop the system and the structure, the governance model, then you can really port this into whatever sector it might be. So I think that's what's so fascinating about the connective in the leadership that you've been able to really drive at GPEC, is getting 22 plus communities to think, to take a step back, to slow down and think about how can we drive sustainable innovation for the long term. So it's just been fascinating to partner with you on this and lead this effort together. So question for you, I mean, if you could have a crystal ball, magic eight ball, you know, where do you see the connective being able to go in 5-10 years? You know, what's your ideal goal for the organization in the region?
Yeah, good question. So I'd say first and foremost, maintaining operational discipline is going to be really important. We need to ensure that we don't try to become all things to all people, and then we dilute the value of what the system was intended to create. So I think that's one. Fast forward 5 years, I hope it does two things. I hope we adhere to the governance structure of adopting smart technology, smart solutions at scale, predicated on what citizen needs are. So that'd be one body of work. The other would be that we induce this collaborative system whereby the testing and validation of emerging technologies that we couldn't even talk about on today's podcast because we're not familiar with them yet. But that's how fast technology is changing. And I mean, I was talking to a company the other day and I said, well, are you showcasing me a drone or what is that? And then, well, it's a people mover in, you know, the most advanced mobility technology state that exists. And it's in an R&D lab, you know, along with DOD or supported by DOD, but they have commercial application. And so here I am thinking, okay, how do we build helipads into building code in the next 10 years? And I'm sure like your audience is like, this dude's crazy, right? But in reality, you think about the integration of, you know, at some point we're going to have an app that queues up an autonomous vehicle in a circular, you know, the circulating format whereby you can choose to have a car, you can choose not to have a car or a vehicle, but, you know, these low emission or no emission vehicles are going to get queued that take us to and from our next meeting or appointment. And yet think how that's going to change the building code, you know, for the way that we build our future buildings. And so that's just one case. So those would be two things I would hope, you know, we embrace, and that the connective becomes a very strategic testing and validation structure, along with being a very intentional smart governance approach for adopting smart technology.
Yeah, those are great points. And I find that interesting too, because a lot of times, I mean, you mentioned building code and governance, you know, a lot of times the unintended consequences of these innovations, right? Sometimes the technology isn't really supported by the ordinances, the legal structures. And so being able to really take these two efforts in parallel, right? Both really help the testing and validation of the technologies, but also work on the governance and legal side of the house as well. It's going to be necessary. And I think the connective is that perfect structure. So I think it's a model that I think, in my humble opinion, is creating a blueprint for not only the rest of the country, but the rest of the world. It's been fun to watch.
Well, I think, you know, I go back and like, who deserves a lot of credit for this? I mean, Governor Ducey years ago, 2015, kind of was a trailblazer early on when, you know, AVs were like, you know, something you read about in a tech publication, but they, you know, as they became more mainstream to be tested and validated, you know, the executive order that was put forward opened the door for not only now we see fintech, blockchain, you know, wear tech, you name it, we're testing a variety of new emerging technologies in Arizona here. So I think, you know, in part, that's where it started. You throw, you know, ASU and the juggernaut that engineering capacity at ASU is, you have a really dynamic, interesting testing and validation petri dish, right? And so I see those two things. And to your point, Dom, you just made, that latter piece of regulatory assessment, the only way you get that moving at any kind of speed is if those participants are involved early on in the process. You're not going to get technologists to be able to go to a public body and say, we need to change your ordinance because our widget works better than the current widget. Right. And so in my mind, it's like we're creating a new culture for the adoption of smart technology on the back end, but on the front end, we're creating a governance structure where they get to peek under the tent and see what's happening.
Hey, just in case our audience isn't familiar, we've referenced the connective before, but let's spell it out. Like, what is the connective to you, and how is it uniquely structured to get these results you see in the next 5 years?
Well, so the connective was spun out with just, you know, there was a few folks that kind of came together with a brain jam session on an idea that was, we needed a formulated entity that would do the things we just talked about, that coordinates all these public sector entities. So again, CIOs, city managers, mayors, and Dom, you probably remember, I thought, well, let's go talk to the mayors. We'll get them all on board. And what happened? They were all like, Chris, hell yeah, this sounds interesting. Let's go. But then it was like, well, we need to talk to the city managers because they control the purse, you know, and certainly the reputation of the community. And then as we talked to city manager, it was like, hey, make sure CIOs are wrapped into this because they're the, you know, the brain cells around all of this. And so you had all these disparate parts. And so that was the original focus of the connective, to bring together these parties in a governance structure. And then what we did was we brought in some of our private sector partners to help fund the initial organizational framework so that we had industry at the table as well. So it wasn't just government, it was industry pushing government. And it was kind of, in fairness, a nice push-pull. You know, so industry would come with their grandiose and speed, speed to market needs. And you'd have government saying, well, you know, here's the regulatory process we need. And then you'd have, government as a system saying, we need, you know, this kind of insight and this kind of advisement. And so that structurally is, you know, where the benefit, I believe, comes in.
Yeah.
Cool. So how are you seeing the... Tell us a little bit about how, let's go back to economic development. How's Greater Phoenix seeing the success of the efforts of, whether it's the work you're doing as economic development or the connective, and just, some people say the desert's starting to go green and the region's becoming this EV hub. You know, like, what are you seeing that you're excited about? How do you help those that are not living here understand the amazing feats that are happening here in Phoenix?
Well, Chris, we learned a really hard lesson back in 2008 to about 2011.
Yeah, I chuckled when you said you moved here then. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that perfect timing to do what we do. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, it was almost a TKO, to be honest. I mean, you think about the over-leveraged debt position we were in. You had, you know, at a time we're building 60,000 single-family homes, you know, people owning multiple homes, the market crashes. And so it gave us a chance to reset how we think about building an economy. And Arizona is no, go back in our history, there's been numerous times where we've had cycles like this, boom and bust mentality. And so again, I give a lot of credit to people like Kirk Adams years ago and many others that were involved in coming together to say, we need to reshape the way we think about the economy, be more focused on base industries, technology, export-oriented enterprises. And we build a tax and economic development structural program, set of programs to encourage that to happen. And so coming out of that last recession, we found pretty graphic changes in our policy, in our investment schemes, in our universities and community colleges, and to align with industry. And what morphed from that was we started seeing, you know, companies like Intel decide to expand their facilities in Chandler. And fast forward, we see the semiconductor resurgence in the United States. we're one of the four markets in the entire country we're seeing rapid growth in semiconductors. You actually now have more advanced manufacturing jobs in Greater Phoenix than you do construction jobs. I mean, so the whole shift is underway. Add to that technology growth, add to that mission critical facilities, corporate back office functions. This is an entirely different economy than your granddad's economy, as we like to say, but that's only really a 10-year shift. So, you know, today, I just went over this with our team. You know, we've had 43 new global companies enter the Arizona, the Metro Phoenix market, and I'm sure our state partners have many more statewide, but 43 new companies have decided to move to Greater Phoenix in these areas of technology, semiconductors. You mentioned there's been three major investments in electric vehicles with Electromechanica, Nikola Motors, and Lucid. And there might be a few more up our sleeve coming out soon. So the good news is, like, we're
nothing you want to break here first.
Yeah. Maybe over a few beers we can talk about that, but probably not today. So, yeah, I mean, the future is very bright, and I expect us to have, I mean, I'm not joking. I think we'll have another 50 to 60 companies in the next 2 to 3 quarters make announcements here. That's the clip of activity that Metro Phoenix is seeing.
Well, and it's amazing just to see. I moved here in 05, and I think I heard that 52% of the Phoenix Valley economy was tied to real estate in some way, shape, or other. And talk about a perfect storm. And I heard the same stat in approximately 2018 that it was about 22%. So to your point, we stabilized, we got hit, we stabilized, but then we bounced back and we got that broad platform of alternative jobs and some really ones in the sweet spot. And now, like, you look at how important chips are to the world and seeing the success that you all have had in attracting the best semiconductor that wakes up our local, the best semiconductor. And that, like, it's getting everyone excited. It's amazing progress. So.
Yeah. I mean, people don't realize the generational project that Taiwan Semiconductor really is. Awesome. And I mean, it is, we spent 3.5 years back and forth to Taiwan, and you know, for those on the call today or the viewers, I can tell you, I mean, the chips are in everything.
Everything.
Their advanced technology, as you know, an ASU's engineering team was so pivotal to that decision-making process. They wanted and needed to be in the U.S. And I don't even, I mean, it almost goes without saying, but it needs to be said too, I guess, is the geopolitics that are occurring globally to fortify the U.S. manufacturing and supply chain base is only encouraging global companies to come to the United States and set up shops. So,
for sure. I mean, one of the biggest risks to Taiwan was the South China Sea stuff that was happening there with, you know, aircraft carriers being positioned. There's just amazing things going on that I don't think people really understand that have the ramifications to almost every supply chain in the world.
Well, and you were talking smart technology today. You know, the chips advancement in terms of the speed and now the nanometer scale that these chip producers are producing. And even across the larger scale, I mean, the 10 nanometer demands for the U.S. I mean, top to bottom, there's overarching chip demands. And so the downstream companies, the customers, are necessitating the shift for these foundries and chip producers to be in the U.S. As Intel also reshapes its business model, there's been a $20 billion investment here as well. So again, there's just a lot to be proud of. But what I'm even probably more optimistic about, the next generation that's going to come after these foundries, I mean, it is dozens of.
Well, yeah, the entire ecosystem changes. I mean, for every huge win like a TSMC or Intel like re-upping, that brings in all these other sub-suppliers. ASU is massively changing its advanced manufacturing engineering program to create the talent to go actually work in these things and keep iterating. And guess what? Instead of it being overseas, it's now here. You're dead spot on. Like, the stuff in 10 years for the next grandfather generation is good. We don't even know what it is.
Yeah. Well, and I was talking to Secretary Raimondo as part of this coalition last week, the Secretary of Commerce, and the Biden administration, following on from the Trump administration, there's going to be continued EOs to promote not only global security, but just as important, there was an EO last week on an area in China that it's been controversial because of it's in the area where the Uyghurs are living, where there was an EO specifically to reduce the amount of polysilicon being imported to the U.S. Well, that's a major portion of the location globally where this polysilicon is produced and exported. So you think about how that's going to impact semiconductors, going to impact solar cells. Yeah. I mean, the shift is on. And so, you know, for the last few administrations, we've been focused on U.S. manufacturing and reshoring. The reason why Metro Phoenix and Arizona have had success is we can scale. We have a lot of labor. We have a lot of modern infrastructure. We're not the only place across the country this can happen, but the U.S. is going to yield massive levels of advanced manufacturing that we haven't seen in the last 20 to 30 years.
Right. Well, so one thing about smart cities and regions is that they're broad, but that's also the frustrating thing. So how do you, from your perspective, look at these initiatives and make sure that they get moving? And like, how does GPEC help kind of structure so that reinforces to the groups that you're trying to attract that it kind of fits into the ecosystem? I mean, there's got to be a method to how you create space and then also tie it back to what you're seeing in the marketplace.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a loaded question. There's a lot of pieces to this, so I'll keep it brief. But, you know, it starts with the targeting of the types of companies and industries that we want, right? So you go out globally and there's about 7 super cycle sectors happening right now. So these super cycles are emerging or have emerged, I should say. And so we're looking at the macro level spends. We're looking at where these industries are located, you know, geographically, internationally. And then how does our value proposition align with those sectors? Once those companies are then targeted, or once they're targeted and they become a project, then it becomes, you know, as part of our value proposition, how do we fortify the argument and the integration as to why Arizona makes sense versus, say, other places that these companies might want to access? And, you know, some of the secret sauce to all of this is you might find an EV company that says, you know, we're considering manufacturing in the U.S., but, you know, the differentiators today and their analysis are cost and labor and infrastructure and those pieces. But the X factor ultimately might be how they test and validate a certain new coil in the battery that makes it more efficient. Mm. I mean, that, because all of the things being equal, a Dallas, a Phoenix, and Austin, you know, name all these places, they might be within a, you know, 5 to 10% delta on cost.
Right.
The TCO. But their ability to play in a sandbox where they can test and validate emerging technologies, that's how we've used the connective as an X factor. And anyone across the country, when I say anyone, you can build these things at a regional scale. But Chris, to your question, it's really hard to get people to agree, to collaborate, to see who's on first, to see who has to be in charge. And one thing about Greater Phoenix is we collaborate. And that goes back to GPEC's inception. And I believe that if we didn't have all these cities as organized as we do, you know, there would be massive fights constantly over who got the next shiny object, as Dom referenced earlier. Instead, everybody takes a step back and it's about rising tide lifts all boats and the greater good. And somebody smacks, you know, steps out of line, you know, you got to get them back in line. And that's what the private sector leadership is here for. So that's, we've been fortunate. We've got mayors that see the vision and private sector, you know, parties that want to cultivate, you know, a spirit of cooperation here.
Yeah. I mean, I just love it. I can see now why the sports analogy makes so much sense. I mean, you're constantly strategizing, you're constantly game planning to stay ahead of the curve and stay ahead of your competition, as you mentioned. So I think it's just fascinating kind of all that goes into, you know, all these economic development decisions that, to your point, the connective almost looks easy, but it's because you've been spending, you know, the last number of years since GPEC's inception, building that collaboration, building that structure, building those partnerships to make this successful. So it wasn't done overnight. It was a lot of hard work. And, you know, I think we can attest to that in some of the sports we see as well. You know, championship teams aren't born overnight. It takes time. It takes dedication. It takes planning. So fascinating perspective. I love this conversation. So speaking of that, though, a lot of our audience is city managers, mayors across the country, CIOs, as you mentioned. You know, with a lot of their attention right now is on the federal stimulus and the money, a massive amount of money that's coming down from the federal government. How are you advising the cities in Greater Phoenix? How are you ensuring that, again, they're taking a step back and thinking smartly about how they're investing these dollars into certain infrastructure or certain programs or certain initiatives, so that way they're not just rushing out to spend money on the next shiny object. What has been some of your advice to the communities in the stimulus process?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a twofer response here, because I think ties to your last comment too. One is, you know, anybody could do this. Leveraging the historical economic coordination of a regional economic development entity, like there's a lot of these that exist across the country, but if they do exist, harmonizing that, and I would also argue like the Maricopa Association of Governments, the Transportation Coalition, mm-hmm. there's a lot of these MAGs and PAGs and, you know, across the country's transportation coalitions. If you're able to bring those two entities together, which we have with the Connective, you have a lot of institutional collaboration that already exists. Now you bolt on the smart region or smart cities, depending upon the size and scale of the community. That, to me, creates that operational discipline we talked about. But I don't think you could jump into that. I really don't think you can jump into that latter piece without the initial framework of economic coordination and transportation coordination. Now, how does that then portend national infrastructure and, you know, certainly the Recovery Act funds? I was at a meeting, and this is real time. I was at a meeting yesterday where, you know, one of these major global companies considering an investment here. You know, I would tell you who it is, but I have to give away my second child if I do, so won't do that today. But one thing we talked about was this more suburban community outside of Metro Phoenix, yet had the acreage, had some of the infrastructure in place, had the scale necessary. And yet when we talk about infrastructure readiness, in our world, it's site readiness or site elimination. You either are ready or your site gets eliminated. And that's kind of a newer phenomenon in the last decade. But what I've been talking to a lot of our cities about, and it's very similar to what we're talking about with smart cities. Think about your next generation water and wastewater capacity. Something so simple, every city needs it. But instead of going at it alone, thinking about a multi-jurisdictional approach, infusing smart technology, so you're educating the citizen base on the why. Why do you need it? Why do base industry jobs matter in this case? And why investing in a, I call it like a layer cake approach, where you're dedicating local monies, county monies, maybe state monies, and then the top of the layer cake is federal monies. I think that's how the stimulus model is going to go, the most recent one, the infrastructure plan. So to me, it's about getting your act together on baseline infrastructure. And then I would overlay, if you know, since you asked me the question, I would overlay, you know, just like we're doing with the Connective, what are the multi-jurisdictional at-scale strategies that have a magnitude of generational influence or impact, and use those as moonshot projects. They have to be realistic, but I'll tell you, I think that's what's going to move the needle instead of your process of yesteryear, where it's simply let's go and buy for a specific, you know, infrastructure need that meets my tomorrow need. I'm talking about generational shift. We have to think bigger and multi-jurisdictionally, and I'm hopeful that's what you know, becomes of, you know, the infrastructure bill as it comes up. It's going to be over $1 trillion of new monies, but leverageable, I think, by a lot of our cities and towns.
Any examples you can give?
Not just yet. So, because I don't want to spill our beans of our strategy, because, you know, this is what we're formulating now to advocate. I think it's going to be really competitive. But I will say this, in one of the briefs last week with Secretary Raimondo, if anybody followed what was called the Endless Frontier Act, that's now known as the Innovation and Competitiveness Act, I think is what it's called. And it's going to be an approach where the federal government will use federal resources through NSF to stimulate the heartland, which means outside the coast, urban innovation, and urban meaning like non-coastal innovation. But what they're going to require, at least we'd advise them to do, is make sure that industries and in markets have their act together. So it requires universities, community college, cities within regions, and industry to be working together to advocate for whatever their next future is. This makes logical sense versus a moonshot approach where, you know, you're sending a dream plan out. I mean, to me, it's like Arizona semiconductors and aerospace and healthcare. Those are three sectors that are mainstays. How do we take the next generation of those and create future intellectual property development in a lab strategy? So that's where we're directionally heading.
Love it. Love it. Great ideas. Well, we're kind of coming to an end here. We do ask something common of our guests, like, what big break, is there anything you want to call out that you're especially appreciative of And along the way, is there anyone, as you've learned about the Urban Complex and what we're doing, that you think we should have on the show? Could be the same person or could be something else. Anything that comes to mind?
Well, I do think what's unique, again, going back to what makes this place tick, it's these cities. I have new mayors come in and out of our system all the time. In one of my cities, I won't name names, but I had probably the most conservative mayor at the local level that exists in the region. And now that he's termed out, the community selected one of the more progressive Democrat mayors. And so what's unique is we're constantly injecting, Dom, you just talked about sports analogies. We just traded for another player. How does that player then come onto the field and affect the team and the culture? That to me is like what makes our system unique, is bringing in new parties constantly and having the same effect, a similar effect. Now, to your question, Chris, I love people who can see the future and predict trends. And, you know, if I had to pick someone that's done that better than I think anybody in our community, I'll give you two. One was Michael Crow, naturally, as a leader, sophistication, thinker, historian. Every time I sit with him, I get challenged intellectually. And we love to debate and strategize. And I just think he's next level thinker. And I put Bobby Robbins up there too with U of A too. I just said I went to a Suns game with him recently, and we were talking about his background and what an impeccable human being as well. But I'd say those two, and then I'm gonna give you one classic one that I just think would be entertaining for your followers is Derek Hall from the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
So D Hall is the leader of the Diamondbacks. They're infusing analytics. They're infusing smart technology in the stadium, enhancing the fan experience. I've talked to them about some of this, and they're, you know, the new way that they're trying to cultivate the next generation fan. So it fits into this conversation, but you'll have, if he's coming on to the show at some point, you have to ruse him. He was going to be a stand-up comedian at one point. He is an absolute riot. And I was with him and the governor in Israel years ago, in one of the governor's first overseas trips, and how he had this uncanny ability to do impersonations of people.
Oh man.
Way entertaining than someone like me, but and obviously sharp and just an incredible storyteller and great history in the game of baseball. So anyway, those would be my two or three folks I'd recommend.
Well, I hate to say, we're going to have to put you to work. Derek would be great. If we haven't had someone representing the future of sports, which definitely has a ramification in cities. And Michael Crow, he did say, hit him up in the fall. He's likely interested, but having someone like you put a shot in his ear, that would help us land him. So that'd be great.
Yeah, happy to lean on him. We'll do.
All right, cool. And you know what? I did get my MBA from U of A, so we'd be happy to have Bobby Robbins too. So great advice.
Awesome.
Don't tell that to Michael. All right.
Well,
so
Chris,
wait, go ahead.
Before we wrap up, just because I know, Chris, you're a big sports guy. So, you know, you're a soccer guy as well, like me. So I have to say, you know, with the Phoenix Suns making the run right now, what was better, the Phoenix Rising run year two back or the Suns run right now? What would you say would be more exciting?
Oh, you're putting me in a horrible spot here, Dom. you know, I was at I think every home game during the run, the 20-game streak last year for the Phoenix Rising. And just really cool to see this young team evolve to become the top team in USL. So that was a lot of fun. I can tell you, this is a Suns town. I was at the game last night. Obviously, we took a defeat. But the energy in this stadium is I've been to Super Bowls, been to PGA events, maybe outside the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which is also a bucket list experience. Suns in the playoffs, this town just goes crazy. I mean, it goes absolutely crazy. And so I'm hopeful we battle back. If it's on the road, you know, tomorrow in game six or, you know, shoot, game seven coming back home, I'd love to see the Suns make it to the finals, first time since 93. So we're all gunning for the Suns, absolutely.
There we go. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right. With that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Chris Camacho, CEO of Greater Phoenix Economic Council. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs.
leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through the Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
All right, Chris, that was Chris Camacho. What'd you think?
Yeah, you know, we knew of our local stories. He's one of the top few that's just doing amazing things. I could go a bunch of places. And you heard us nerd out a little bit about the semiconductor stuff, so I won't go too far into that. I kind of did what I would have said then and got him riffing. That was fun. But I just think for me, what I've seen is that if you're moving somewhere and you don't place the right thing of importance at the center of what you're focused on, you're going to end up with an antiquated output. Yeah. So for this instance, where I'm going is that it's got to be the citizen at the center of the decision making, and citizen at the center of defining the problem. And when you have that right, then, as he said, you can bring together this disparate parts. You have these groups that don't really, I'm kind of bringing together two themes. You have these groups that don't necessarily talk together in a lot of organizations unless they're really performing well. Places like procurement doesn't necessarily talk to IT well, doesn't necessarily talk to finance well, doesn't necessarily talk to their business leadership well, doesn't necessarily talk to their security teams well. And what happens is you get this disconnect, right? And so a lot of times they focus on their internal processes first and not necessarily the entity that they're trying to serve. Or they think that one they're trying to serve is their stakeholders that represent those other groups. Now, what Chris is talking about is that you put the citizen at the center and the right things come. So if you define the problems the right way and you work backwards or you deconstruct from there, you can really recreate systems that really have the potential to scale. I don't know. To me, it's the alignment of the bodies that need to work together, but more importantly, align them towards who you're trying to work for. If you align that right, you can do amazing things.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it very interesting, especially from an economic development perspective, that he did think smart cities was all about the citizen, the challenges first, right? Putting that at the center, economic development will come, right? Yeah. Focus on that. I thought that was brilliant. One thing that I've always been fascinated with Chris and his leadership, because we are very much alike. We're very competitive, very kind of go, go, go. But I've also been so honored to work alongside him because he always has the mind to take a step back and really think about long-term while driving quickly today and thinking about smart governance and how are we structurally organizing these initiatives to be successful for the long-term. Because sometimes we rush out just to go partner and just go do a project, but we don't really think about the governance model. How are we going to make decisions? Where are we strategically focused on? And, you heard it through his idea of, where does he see the Connective in 5 years? And he says, I hope we maintain operational integrity, right?
That was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because what can happen is you can fray yourself at the seams if you don't have smart governance, and the one that looks the best outside can go one direction and someone else that feels, wait a second, they're getting an alignment. I'm going to go this direction. You're right. It's a really important point.
Yeah. And so I think sometimes that's a great point for our listeners who are setting up their own smart city programs is, don't be so quick to just get out there again, buy the shiny object. Really take time, take a step back as Chris Camacho did in organizing this regional ecosystem and think about the governance model. How is this going to work? How is it going to operate? Because that's going to ultimately be the foundation on which you build your house. That's going to last you for the long term, right? Because initiatives come and go. Programs maintain and sustain over a long term. And I think what Chris has done so incredibly well is built programs here in the Greater Phoenix region that have allowed us to be really competitive. And now you're starting to see it come to fruition with all of the companies that he mentioned, the semiconductor success that we've had, right? It wasn't built overnight, as we talked about on the podcast. It was a long time coming. It was a lot of hard work. But right. Now it's starting
to happen. And they last beyond a leader. I mean, he said it took 3.5 years. And some of those with those attractions were working with different cities. Their leadership changed during that time, and they still closed it. That's incredible. Yeah. Well, cool. So it's interesting. I have a hunch. We were sharing some ideas for cracks in the pavement. I want to ask you, because I think you wrote a great article. I think it fits in nicely to some of the things Chris was saying and some of the things that were learned here. Tell us what's top of mind for you today.
Yeah, I found a good one this week, is about the program in Columbus. And the headline caught my attention, and the headline's America's Smart City Didn't Get Much Smarter. And it comes off very negative in its tone of the tagline, but it's an article about the city of Columbus. I think, as we all know, all of our listeners are probably aware, Columbus won the first DOT Smart City Challenge, got $40 million, $50 million to really drive a transportation related initiative program in the city of Columbus and the surrounding region. And it talks about how, in their opinion, the author's opinion, it didn't quite live up to expectations after, I think, five years. There wasn't much to be shown. And I think you're right. It just goes to this great point that we were discussing with Chris Camacho about building the governance model, the foundation, the systems, the processes that are going to enable you to be successful in these initiatives. Because I think a lot of our mayors, a lot of our economic development directors, a lot of our city managers, they think money's going to solve all of the problems, right? Oh, just give me $50 million and we'll be able to transform our transportation initiative. Well, money's not always the panacea that you're looking for, right? And so without those governance models, without those systems, it's going to be hard to spend $50 million.
Or it's actually not hard, which is the weird thing, but you spend it in a way that doesn't necessarily get the impact you're looking for. And that's why the governance part and the hard work pays off. And what I was thinking when we were hearing Chris and the summary and knowing this article, if you don't have great internal alignment to the organization, or you don't have a really deep empathetic understanding of the citizen you're trying to solve, you get this fraying experience. And so in this case, some of the things they had this beautiful app, but only got downloaded 1,100 times. Well, so I don't claim to know enough about where they focus, so I'm not saying that I know better. But like, if you don't have enough utility in there to get someone to come back for more, well, first of all, those early people that actually take the message that they receive and go download it, they're not going to go tell their friends. And if there's no way to kind of create network effects, it kind of dies on the vine. And so if they don't have a bunch of more revisions in the pipeline, it just gets out there. Maybe the city didn't believe it. Maybe the Department of Transportation or the group that's running the Metro didn't believe it. Who knows where things got stuck? Like, that's, I don't claim to know, but it's really hard. You need to cross those functions within these organizations that oftentimes, before you've built the strong governance, they don't talk to each other. And Chris was talking about the governance across entities, meaning across cities. This is within a region, or this is within a city of Columbus. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting point. This stuff isn't easy, but once it gets figured out, it gets scaled, and that's what's great about this show. We can find the great ones, and maybe we can get them on to kind of tell some of their stories about what did work. Because I'm sure there's this article probably had that negative press. I'm sure there's some great things that did work, but also things that we can learn from. So that's kind of my two cents.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, and to me, it kind of positions as smart cities as it doesn't work, but I mean, it has to work. Innovation continues to thrive in urban environments. We can't just quit.
Yeah, exactly.
Challenges from mobility to digital equity to poverty, to you name it, these challenges aren't going to go away. We can't just quit. We have to figure out new ways of doing things, new governance models, right? That's why I think what we've built here with the Connective, it's new. It's a governance model that's unlike any other. And will we hit bumps in the road? Of course. But we're not going to quit. And you're going to your point, there were probably some good things that they learned, and there are probably some bad things that they learned. But you take the hit, you grow, and you move on. You figure out how to continue to push forward. So
we need to find out who's in there that we know or who knows them. If anyone listening, I know some of the folks in Columbus, we'd love to have them on. I'm sure some of our friends have said we need to get them on because they've done great things. So it was interesting to see that article headline. It's unfortunate. This industry does love to bash smart cities. I'm glad we didn't call this a smart city podcast instead of the urban complex. But
It's complex, right?
It is complex. That's why we did it.
Perfect article. All right, Chris, great stuff this week.
Cool. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.